Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Police continue the search for a missing Portland teenager. 50 protesters are arrested during yesterday's N-17 protest, and Herman Cain has Secret Service protection.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, November 18th, 2011. Police are continuing their search for a missing Portland teenager following the discovery of his car in downtown Portland. Officers said that 18-year-old Henry Willard Smith III lives with a critical mental health situation. His safety may be at risk.
No one named Willard should also be named the Third.
No.
Those two things don't go together.
There's a proud tradition of the Willard name in the Smith family.
Yeah.
His name is
Snuffy the Fourth.
Calling somebody Smith the Third isn't really particularly meaningful, so you got to give him the useful name, the one that sets him apart from others. You don't know. Maybe there's a Henry Willard the Smith the First who invented cake.
I don't know. Just being named Willard is like being from Okefenokee. Mm. It robs you of all gravitas.
Well, he hasn't been seen or heard from since 6 p.m. Wednesday. He's believed to have been in downtown Portland near the Marriott Hotel. His 1986 gold Jaguar.
Yeah. No.
18-year-old Henry Willard Smith
has bad taste.
Who has some kind of a mental health problem, has a 1986 gold Jaguar.
Well, maybe not anymore.
Hmm. Anyway, that was found earlier this week, but he is still missing. He is not believed to pose any risk to the public. Smith is 18 years old, 5'11", weighs 150 pounds. He has medium-length brown hair and blue eyes. Missing persons detectives said they also received some credible information that Smith is likely wearing a red baseball cap, some sort of sweatshirt, and most distinctively white skinny jeans with thin black vertical stripes on them.
It's official. I don't care about him. I don't care about him. I don't care what happens to him. I don't care about his goddamn car.
A lovely person.
You know, nobody who drives a gold Jaguar, unless you are Liam Gallagher, is a lovely person. And even he's not a lovely person.
First of all, he was saddled with the name Willard. So he's had a lot to overcome. Mm-hmm. I think we could give him a little credit.
Sounds like somebody is sympathizing with the 1%. Traitor.
That's true.
I think there's going to have to be a...
I've decided in my next life, I want to marry up. So that's it. I'm just going to start sucking up to the rich now.
Why in your next life?
Well, because I've already screwed this one.
Oh, we could take care of him.
Oh yeah, no, but I mean, as far as
I can have him removed.
As far as me marrying into money, I mean, let's face it, the sell-by date on my ass is has expired.
It's not a Patrick issue; it's a Dawn issue.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a me being able to attract the gentleman with the money who will make me his. His lady toy.
Well, you don't know that that's true. Maybe you're just not looking hard enough.
I don't know.
Cast a wider net, Don. Okay. Lower your standards.
All right. Protesters were pepper sprayed by police during the height of Thursday's N-17 protest in downtown Portland. An organizer said at least one person was hospitalized.
Sexiest protest of all.
Just before 4:30 p.m., police... Yeah, no minors will be allowed in without a parent or guardian.
Yeah.
Just before 4:30 p.m., police used pepper spray on several protesters for the first time since the protests began since October 6th, after a protracted standoff with protesters at the Chase Bank at 6th and Yamhill. The conflict began when about a dozen protesters filled the revolving doors leading into the bank. A large group of mounted police responded and blocked access to the bank. After a large number of protesters gathered, spilling into the streets, police used a public address system to announce that the street would be reopened and would have to be cleared. And shortly afterward, they broke out the pepper spray.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just saying, well, first of all, Chase is not, you know, headquartered here in general. But even in Portland, I'm not suggesting that anybody go cause a further ruckus. I'm just saying, doesn't Chase probably have a headquarters somewhere in the city? Like, the headquarters for Chase Portland isn't at 6th and Yamhill, I don't think. Like, there's probably in a building somewhere.
Yeah.
It seems like they're... I'm just saying, it seems like they're just screwing all the wrong people by blocking... You're not going to piss off Ray Kroc by blocking a McDonald's downtown here. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Like, the man isn't at that bank. The man is somewhere else altogether. The man doesn't even... Man doesn't... Looks out his window, doesn't even see you.
Well, one of the KGW TV photographers was also caught in the middle of the scuffle and was sprayed. Which, I can't remember which one it is. Either KGW or KPTV, if you go online... They've got some, like, really terrific photographs accompanying their story. Mm-hmm. And then the byline, they're from the Portland Tribune photographer.
Oh, so close.
So good work there, local news agency. Anyway.
To be fair, if, you know, somebody was going to go down to get maced, I would send someone else in my place. Just say, hey, send me the photos, you know, when you're out of, when you can see, you know, like, the button on your camera.
Again, that's why we need an intern.
Just for a macing?
For to put in situations where there might be mace.
Yeah, no, I know guys who are photographers, and that's one of those... The thing about being a news photographer is even now you're carrying this big-ass, bulky camera around, and they do that thing of like just getting in the zone where they're not really aware that, like, the bull in Pamplona is running at them, because they're just like, I got this awesome shot, and it's because, like, the thing is heading, you know, at their heads. So, yeah, if you can just send someone of lesser importance to be sprayed in your stead, I say do it. Mm.
Rick Perry would like to square off with Nancy Pelosi in a debate. The one-time Republican frontrunner wants to go toe-to-toe with the House Speaker on the merits of his proposed overhaul of Washington. He wrote a letter to Pelosi, which was obtained by the blog The Hill, and he claimed Democratic opposition to his overhaul plan, which would essentially make Congress a part-time institution, complete with half the pay, along with halting lifetime appointments for federal judges and halving the president's paycheck, is mostly a result of Washington's permanent political class attempting to continue their obstructionist ways in the face of a much-needed Washington reform. So he issued a challenge. He said, I'm in Washington Monday, would love to engage you, Nancy Pelosi, in a public debate about my overhaul Washington plan. It's capitalized, so apparently that's actually a plan with a title. It's Overhaul Washington versus the congressional status quo. I think it would be a tremendous service to the American public to see the public airing of those differences. Let the public decide.
It's like a cage match or something? I don't...
Kind of, yeah.
I want you!
Nancy Pelosi!
He should start calling
here
her
Monday!
Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy Palooser.
There you go.
Yeah,
see, there's like two jokes in one there.
It didn't take long for Nancy Pelosi to respond to the debate challenge. The former House Speaker responded Thursday to the invite by poking fun at the Texans' now famous debate gaffe. To the Los Angeles Times recounts, Ocasio said, she suggested that she couldn't debate Perry on Monday because her schedule was booked with three events that day, an event in Portland, a tour of labs in California, and, quote, that's two. I can't remember what the third thing is.
Oh, sad. Now, did I miss any, because all the debates and everything happened while I was gone. Did I miss anything exciting? Anybody trip or fall?
The only really good thing was what she's referring to there, where Rick Perry was asked, like, he was in the zone, man. He was talking about the three government agencies that he would get rid of. And he's like, it would be education, Department of Commerce, and...
The third thing.
There's another one.
Damn it.
And then Mitt Romney goes, EPA? He goes, well, EPA... No, it's not... And Mitt Romney almost caught him. And he's like, you know, it's not the EPA... And then the guy who was moderating the debate said, is it the EPA, sir? Would that be it? He's like, no. It's education, commerce, and I'm sorry. I just can't remember what the other one is right now. And then he said, Oops.
Ah, that's great. Oh, I wish I'd seen it. Well, it's probably on YouTube.
All in that great Matthew McConaughey voice that he has.
That's great. See, that you know, I'm glad that you're here to recap these things for me. And see, now her joke makes much more sense.
Right.
The proper, contextually speaking, it's five times as hilarious.
She says, I can't debate you because I have three events that day, an event in Portland, a tour of labs in California, and that's two. I can't remember what the third thing is.
Someone's been memed, Rick Perry.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Well, Occupy protesters are focusing on the fact that the rich in the U.S. are getting richer, while income for most Americans is stagnant or falling.
We should go Occupy protesters. Literally just be on top of them. Sit on a guy, and I'm occupying Occupy Portland, and just sit on a guy downtown.
We could get a guy for that.
Yes.
I bet Aaron Duran would do that for us.
Why do you go right to Aaron Duran lately? Like, yesterday, you like... We're kicking him about something, and then today, get Aaron Duran!
No, I just think I could see Aaron Duran happily sitting on some Occupy protest guy, and then giggling. I think it would bring him joy.
Giggling like the Frito Bandito, just say it.
I wasn't going to say that.
Oh, you cannot get up! And he's like with a huge hat.
I will sit on you and eat my tacos. No, he wouldn't say that, because that would be racist of me to think that.
Mm-hmm. You just work it out yourself over there.
Anyway, I've lost complete track of what I was talking about.
But back to Mexicans.
The Occupy people don't like the rich folks. And they say, but conservatives say that this whole poor people, like, making less and less money, that they shouldn't worry about that. Matt Continetti with the Weekly Standard argues that the government should be concerned with whether a particular income group is better off.
Is this Occupy One?
Yes.
The founders of this country didn't believe it was an issue. In fact, they believed the purpose of government was simply to protect our natural rights, and that if you did that, you would obviously get inequalities of income and condition.
I swear to God, I really want, like, that Richard Attenborough Jurassic Park thing, just so we can reanimate the founders for, like, 5 minutes and go, okay, I need you to quickly answer these questions now. Gun control, yes, no. Taxes, yes, no. Just, you know, once and for all.
Well, and also, you know, they owned slaves. I don't think we can keep going back to them as the gold standard for ethics.
It seems they might have a flawed template to their belief system.
Some conservatives are countering with a different point of view. Columnist Will Kane with The Blaze.
That sounds pretty gay. Frankly.
Says even if the rich are getting richer, everyone is benefiting.
Over a much longer time frame, we're all growing much richer.
And more fabulous.
Through the same system that is producing income inequality. It just so happens that
I am sparkly. I am covered in sparkles and sequins right now.
The economic system that makes us all more wealthy also makes us more unequal.
Okay. I wasn't really listening. I was just making cheap jokes about the
system that makes us all more wealthy also makes us all more unequal.
Ah, but some more unequal than others. Zing.
So we're all going to be wealthy at some point, but just some people are going to be super wealthy, while the rest of us are just going to be, like, normal wealthy?
Well, there'll be the super wealthy, the hella wealthy, and the stinking rich.
Oh, okay.
I will be none of those things, but apparently most people will fall into one of those.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that because, you know, I used to work in the newspaper industry, so nobody's calling me back on my resume. I'm looking forward to, like, all of this wealth to just roll down on me.
Is this a thing where, like, everybody, like, we're all going to get a monarch title just so we all feel included? Like, we'll all be a duke or something?
I want to be a baron.
Okay.
Okay, not a baroness. I want to be a baron.
All right.
Be Baron Dawn. A local Goodwill employee is accused of stealing thousands of dollars worth of donations from the charity. Jason Baca, 34, of Cornelius, has been under investigation since July. Deputies say he worked as a driver for Goodwill and collected donations from various drop-off sites throughout the Portland metro area. Investigators say he would sort through the donations and steal whatever he wanted.
Wait, I'm sorry. I just heard accusation. I was busy writing down a joke, and then... I heard an accusation. I just assumed this was somebody humping somebody in a shower on a sports team.
No. This is a Goodwill driver who was apparently sorting through all the donations and then just taking the stuff he liked.
Yeah.
Isn't that one of the perks of being the guy who picks up the Goodwill stuff?
Well,
I just assume all of them do that.
You could just go into the store. If you were him, you could just go into the store later and get it anyway. Well, I guess you have to pay for it. But
yeah. But I mean, this way, it's like he's picking stuff up and he goes... You know, ooh, I could use a new blender.
And, you know, really, honestly, you can't miss what you never had. So it's not like anybody in the store is going, where's that thing I never knew was going
to
be here?
Yeah. Well, anyway, he was arrested on Thursday. He admitted to many of the thefts and allowed detectives to recover the stolen merchandise from his home. Detectives say he had shelves full of DVDs, CDs, and video games. They also say he stole 10 flat-screen TVs and hundreds of shoes.
Good for you, sir.
It was so much property, Goodwill donated the use of a tractor trailer to haul it all away.
And then he stole that.
And then he stole that, and then and now he's in Canada.
All right. I was trying to figure out, like, what Baron Dawn would be.
Baron Dawn?
Is Baron Dawn like the world's worst, like, Twilight sequel, or is it, is Baron Dawn, like, seems like there's a...
That'd be my World War I flying ace movie.
Oh, so you're going Baron, I'm going Baron.
Oh, Baron,
that's the joke.
As in,
that's the joke I'm going
oh,
for
as in my, my womb is a...
My seed could find no purchase.
Place.
Yeah.
Yes.
Baron Dawn.
Baron Dawn.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something there.
Our friend Jeff Baer from Movie BS with Baron Snyder did tweet this morning that that Breaking Dawn Part 1, he discovered, is apparently not a movie about my inevitable nervous breakdown.
Well, that's too bad.
So if that's what you were hoping to see when you go, that's not going to happen.
Fortunately/unfortunately, I alone will get to see that. Apparently.
Yes.
So you'll all get to hear it.
You get a front row seat, yeah. My friend.
Sound of my blood splashing in the microphone. Oh, hello. You're listening to Legion of News, by the way, and stuff. It's 12:15. If you're listening to this live, it is Friday, November 18th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. If you want to get the show later on in the day, you can do it via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download at legionofnews.com. And you can take that with you on your mobile device, I guess, for today, at mobile.cascadia.fm. Of course, as many of you may know, today is the last day of this incarnation, this iteration, this evolution, this turn of the karmic wheel. No, not karmic. It's a what's the other kind of wheel?
The grist mill,
sure.
The wheel of destiny,
that thing,
the wheel of fortune,
right? Whatever. For Cascadia .fm. Anyway, as of Monday, this program will continue over at RickEmersonShow.com, or you can also hear the Rick Emerson Show itself and FunEmploymentRadio.com for the low, low cost of really. When you think about it, it's like 9.5 cents a day. And
it's
of course,
getting cheaper all the time, the more stuff we add to
really,
the stream,
we're just
really.
Diluting it down and making it valueless. Right. We're trying to run our shows the way we run our economy. We're just going to dilute it until nothing is worth anything. And if you feel like, hey, F that, I'm not paying you, well, fine. You can also get the show for a week, though. Your first week is free, and at the end of the week, if you feel like you want to keep paying, hey, great. If not, you know, that's your boggle.
Give it a try.
Well, I mean,
what do you got to lose, really?
Seriously.
It is actually free, and then you might go... This is really nice to have all of these things here available to me, and I can still listen live and whatnot.
And, you know, and otherwise your life is just going to be a cold chasm of blackness anyway. You'll have nothing to live for. And what are you doing with your 32 cents? You're not sending it to the fly-covered kids in Africa. We
no,
both know it.
No.
So, you know, just give it to us instead. That's it. RickEmersonShow.com, where as of Monday, you can hear Legion of News at the same time, live at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Herman Cain. Yesterday became the first GOP candidate to receive Secret Service protection. Traditionally, both the Republican and the Democratic nominees are given such security, but it can also be provided for candidates during the primary season, as occurred during the 2004 campaign when John Kerry and John Edwards both received the extra protection in February, and in May 2007 when then-Senator Barack Obama was placed under Secret Service protection. The Associated Press reports that Cain asked for the extra security and congressional administration officials signed off on it after unspecified threats emerged. But campaign spokesman J.D. Gordon later explained the campaign requested the protection shortly after the Washington Post posted an article. The Washington Post posted. They actually did write that. An article detailing a series of physical skirmishes involving protesters at Cain events. On the campaign trail, Cain, quote, draws anywhere from a dozen to 50 media at his events. When he gets out at a rally at our campaign stop, it has been increasingly common for media to be physically putting themselves and others in danger by trying to follow him with a lot of heavy equipment and cameras in close quarters, like we saw yesterday.
Are they just hoping he'll grab a boob right in front of them?
Also sounds like that means that he's getting Secret Service to protect him from the media.
That's what I would do.
That it's actually all those pesky guys with their cameras and questions that need to be kept away from the candidate.
I would have them beaten senseless. I would have them just beaten within an inch of their lives, and then I would mock their tears. And he's such an uninteresting, boring individual. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like they're hoping he'll trip and fall into someone's vagina, like in front of them, so they can go aha, you know. And it, I mean,
j'accuse.
Yes. Like what? What do you think he's going to do? I mean, he's, you know.
Well, he's already proven to be, he's already proven himself to be at least the most interesting guy right now.
Well, I guess that's true.
Because he says really stupid things.
Yeah, there's that.
So, with nothing else really going on. You know, Michelle Bachmann seems to be scaling. She's got people now who are trying to help her scale back her crazy, at least in public.
That's out of the
air. And so now it's like, ooh, Herman Cain says crazy things. Let's follow him now.
Yeah.
So, Ohio troopers making a traffic stop say they found a pot present, a gift-wrapped package containing 25 individually wrapped packets of marijuana.
A pot present.
A pot present.
That's such bad grammar.
And poor writing and poor journalism, yes.
They found pot... I honestly don't understand this. What do they mean when they say present? There?
Well, it was...
It was in the car.
No, they found a present as in a gift-wrapped package.
Okay.
Yeah. The driver from Bremerton, Ohio, has been charged with trafficking in possession of marijuana and possession of criminal tools, both felonies. The State Highway Patrol says the 28 pounds of marijuana discovered in the car's trunk is valued at more than $63,000. 35-year-old Robert Gomez of Bremerton was being held Thursday in the Clark County Jail. Jail officials didn't know whether he had an attorney, and none was indicated in court records.
There's a Bremerton, Ohio?
Apparently so.
What a horrible place that must be.
And it doesn't say what kind of wrapping it had, but I'm thinking, you know, we are now firmly into November, so I'm going to call this the first Christmas-wrapped drug bust of the holiday season. There will, of course, be more to come because we get those stories all throughout, the closer to Christmas yet.
Maybe he was going to make himself a Kwanzaa cake.
Maybe.
With a little, you know, a little extra something in there.
I would just assume that Kwanzaa cake would just come with that, always.
Why is that, Dawn?
Because there's nothing else fun about Kwanzaa?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
The only thing fun about Kwanzaa is I don't do this anymore. I used to just, I would go and I would buy all the discount Kwanzaa cards, like on the day after, I don't know, whenever it was Kwanzaa'd, you know, it was done. And I would just go buy, and then if I had, like, important business communications to conduct through the mail, I would just get a big Mark-a-Lot thing, and I would just go, and I would cross out Kwanzaa and just write in, like, whatever the card was actually, thank you for job interview, you know, and I would follow up with a crudely altered Kwanzaa card.
I look forward to Kwanzaa only because that's when the guy who draws the comic strip, Curtis, completely loses his mind. And he will spend like a week or two telling some ostensible classic Kwanzaa tale about some kid in Africa talking to magical lions and weird gods with strange hats will come down and like, you know, give him a lamp. And these insane stories that don't make any sense. And I just assume that he's making them up.
What is Curtis?
Curtis is a comic strip about a young African-American lad who wears his hat sideways and has an imaginary friend from Flyspeck Island. And
is this in the paper?
Yeah,
or
it's in the newspaper. Yeah.
Is it by Stone Soup?
Yeah, it's in the general
the
vicinity
area
of pickles
the...
and Stone Soup. Yeah.
All right. Okay, so he's not like some hideous like Mallard Fillmore thing where he's like railing on it.
No, he's actually trying to educate people, I guess, about black culture. But when you read these stories, it's like, you know, and then
sounds insane.
Yeah. Then he crawled inside of the lion and then the lion, you know, gave birth to 14 giraffes and an angel and they all gave everyone, you know, pizzas. And it doesn't make any sense at all. And I keep going, really? Is this real? Are these real stories? Really?
Well,
but they're fascinating to read because it's the rest of the year, Curtis is just like, hey, Dad, here's this crazy hip-hop music. Oh, it's too loud for me. I don't like it. And then, you know, punchline and shrug.
Okay.
So, and then he goes Kwanzaa crazy once a year.
He goes plum Kwanzaa crazy. That's the big sale they're going to have down at the Price and Pack. That's the, we've gone Kwanzaa crazy.
We're Kwanzaa-ny.
Look, you know, everybody should have their own ridiculous made-up holiday that they can celebrate. I mean, Jew, Gentile, black, white, everyone should have their own fabricated nonsense. Have at it.
Okay. I celebrate something that we call Mersey Creamy because a friend of mine when I was in high school, somebody had put up a sign that was really badly painted, and it said, it didn't seem to say Merry Christmas. It said Mersey Creamy.
Oh, I see.
And then they had like this one really sad red ribbon, like hanging across their porch. So we decided that was the Mersey Creamy stripe. And so from there on, we always celebrated.
So this wasn't like when you were in Liverpool
creamy.
Or something.
No.
That's what it sounded like.
Made up our own religion. Hey,
just totally unrelated to that, but about signs. Mm. When I was in school many, many, many years ago, when I was a bright-eyed youth with hopes and dreams, before they'd been ground out by an uncaring, cruel, callous world, there was like some sign hanging in the hallway at school. It was like, blah, 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 dance this Friday. It was like, whatever, you know, some crap dance the school is having, you know, this Friday, you know, the luau dance. And I had a friend of mine who just, for reasons that were never adequately explained, and it was, you know, on that huge, like, butcher paper, but it's, like, yellow, and it's got a big smiley and a sun. It's like, you know, invite your date to the luau dance this Friday. And then a friend of mine with a huge black marker just, when no one was in the hallway, just wrote at the bottom, bring a cup for my bleeding eyes. There was no explanation given. She never said, like, why. It was like the best. I remember that to this day.
Wonderful.
It was like one of the best things I've ever seen because it just made no sense and it was like horrifying and hilarious.
Let's do a little science.
All right. And it was a cup.
A cup.
You know, not like a sponge or a glass. Bring a cup. A mug. For my bleeding eyes. What are we doing?
Science.
Ah, yes, science. Oh, now.
The best part of the day.
Here's your Science on the March for Friday, November 18th, 2011.
The H5N1 virus has been circulating among birds and other animals in recent years. It's also infected about 500 people. More than half died. But this dangerous virus has not caused widespread human disease because so far, sick people haven't been very contagious. If the virus evolves to spread as easily between people as seasonal flu, however, it could cause a devastating global pandemic.
Sweet.
So in an attempt to stay ahead of H5N1, scientists have been tweaking its genes in the lab. What could possibly go wrong?
Doesn't it sound like it's a sort of a sassy Jordache commercial?
H5N1?
Tweaking their genes in
their genes. To learn more about how this virus works and what it's capable of, in September, one scientist made a stunning announcement. At a flu conference held in Malta, he said he'd done a lab experiment that resulted in bird flu virus becoming highly contagious between ferrets, which is the animal model used to study human flu interaction. It seemed that just 5 mutations did the trick. It's just a bad idea for scientists to turn a lethal virus into a lethal and highly contagious virus, says Dr. Thomas Inglesby. He says it's a second bad idea for them to publish how they did it so others can copy it.
It's just so Chuck Palahniuk can put it in a book.
News of the results raised red flags. And yes, this fellow, Dr. Thomas Inglesby, who is a bioterrorism expert and director of the Center for Biosecurity at the University of Pittsburgh, just said, please, why? Why is basically what he said. Why would you do this?
Yeah.
And why would you publish how you did it? No science journal has published the information yet, and Inglesby hopes none of them do. Biology research usually has a culture of openness. Scientists report their methods and results so others can repeat their work and learn from it. Inglesby agrees that that's the way to go the vast majority of the time. But in this case, he said, there are some cases that I think are worth an exception to the otherwise very important scientific principle. I can only imagine that the process of deliberating about the publication of these findings is quite serious.
Well, I guess so. I mean, did the guy, when they confronted him, they said, hey, why you mutate the virus? Did he say, like, well, you know, I thought it was a good idea because
they're trying to figure out how it works, so I believe, so that they can find ways to battle it and possibly cure it. And what scientists do is they go in the lab and they just monkey with things. And, you know, I think one of the problems that sometimes happens with science is that it becomes all about, you know, seeing what kind of results that you can get in the immediate future and not really thinking about, you know, the long term. And so this guy went to the flu conference and went, hey, guess what? I figured out how to make H5N1 highly contagious.
You know, here's the thing.
Isn't that awesome? And everyone went, no.
It seems like the problem with science is that we don't run it. Because I know that people think that we are deeply, deeply dense when it comes to science. And we are.
And they would be right.
They are. But then, doesn't it also follow that we would not be able to just, like, get way ahead of ourselves, as scientists often do?
Well, it's like that that rule with evil dictators and bad guys and villains, that you should always run your plan by a 5-year-old. And if the 5-year-old can, like, say, no, but what if you fall in the shark thing or something? Then you go, oh, okay, thank you. The 5-year-old found the hole in my plan. That's the same thing with scientists asking us about their stuff.
Well, and also, like, if you just put us in charge of stuff, we can only really reach the very lowest shelves. I mean, intellectually speaking, we're not going to be able to. We would not be able to weaponize a ferret or whatever it is they did. Like, I would just, like, I wouldn't be able to.
I'd love to.
I'd still be trying to figure out how to work, like, the little key card swipey thing to get in the lab, in the, you know, which is fine. Just, you know.
I'm busy blowing myself up over at the Bunsen burner, so, you know.
You know, or,
I
like,
can't do
I'm doing that thing of, like, rubbing a dollar bill on the corner of the vending machine so I can get, like, you know, a donut. We would not. It would take us hundreds of thousands of years to figure out how to make the, like, to make the coffee pot work, much less. You know, to be, and plus, they're not even figuring out how to solve a thing. They're figuring out how to solve a thing that didn't exist until like 5 minutes ago when the guy made it. And they went, oh, God, we need to figure out how to solve this thing. I just created this horrible thing. Somebody help me. We need to turn it off. Oh, God.
I imagine that happens a lot in science, though.
Oh, yeah.
There's often there must be like a special button for that. Oh, crap. I just invented the wrong thing.
Seriously,
button.
No. It's like and then, you know, when the mist takes John Lee, and then you go, there's a doorway I've opened here. The huge spiders. We need someone. I'm going to go to lunch, you know, so. And plus, the idea of weaponizing something is just, you know, like we. Here's the thing. We got a lot of weapons. We're pretty much weaponed up in this country. We don't really need.
Well, I don't think this was an intentional weaponization. I believe that their intentions originally were quite pure. They wanted to see what the possibilities were in the future, like how, you know, they want to know if it could mutate to be contagious, what it would be involved in mutating it to be contagious, so therefore they could maybe try and keep that from happening.
No, I see.
Then what they did was they figured out that, like, yeah, five mutations and hey, it could be contagious. And so they figured that out. That's great. But the thing is, now it's like, please don't publish that to tell people how to do that.
They shouldn't have pressed the engage button at the end.
Yeah.
They went, okay, now we figured out, just don't press the do it button.
Meanwhile, you just got a whole lab full of ferrets that are just sitting around going,
kill you all!
You know, and just coughing up their lungs and taking Theraflu,
you know,
and hating their lives.
And with their freaky pale-skinned drama chicks that always own them.
Yes.
I'm gonna trademark something. I'm gonna weaponize something that shouldn't be weapon, like weaponized cheese or weaponized. What could I weaponize that's funny?
Twinkies. No, see, food isn't really. I don't
weaponized formica. I'll work on it later. All right, here's Don Taylor.
The Associated Press reports that Congress is fighting the Obama administration's push to make school lunches healthier.
How dare you, sir?
Lawmakers released the final version of an agriculture spending bill late Monday, and the big takeaway was this. It counts the couple of tablespoons of pizza sauce as a full serving of vegetables.
Well, didn't they? Now, is it true that they counted ketchup as a vegetable, or is that like an urban legend?
That was kind of an urban legend. I think what happened was the Reagan administration, Reagan said that. He said, well, ketchup counts as a vegetable. And I don't think anyone was actually counting it as a vegetable. But again, this is the same situation. It's literally the same thing as that. They are trying to say that, well, let me see if I can explain it through this story. And if not, because I've read a whole lot about this.
Not we'll make up the answer.
The bill blocks or delays a number of proposed efforts from the Agriculture Department to ramp up school lunch standards, including new restrictions on sodium and potato servings, and calls for lunch ladies and gentlemen across the nation to dole out more whole grain foods. The way things currently stand, now here's the problem with this, is that there are a lot of companies that make a lot of money delivering the foods that are currently used in the school systems. And this is where this is all coming from, all of this problem, is that these guys are lobbying Congress and saying, it's going to cost us more to feed them actual healthy food.
Right.
And our profit margin will go down. And so the congressmen are then, of course, going, hey, you can't change the nutritional standards for the food. So the way the things currently stand, the sauce on a single slice of pizza counts as a full serving of vegetables. The USDA wanted to tweak those rules so that only a half a cup of sauce or more counts as a full serving of vegetables. A half a cup is a lot of sauce to slather on a single slice of pizza, so therefore, pizza would no longer count as a vegetable.
I don't think sauce is a vegetable. I don't think.
No.
No, that doesn't really.
But thanks to food companies' lobbying efforts, to the tune of $5.6 million, a couple of tablespoons will remain all that needs to earn the vegetable distinction. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, by the way, says that 12.5 million children in the U.S. are obese. The pizza as a vegetable claim is reminding many nutritionists of Ronald Reagan's controversial and ultimately failed push to count ketchup as a vegetable. Margot Wootan, probably pronounced.
I'm not even going to do it.
Probably pronounced Wooten. Director of Nutritional Policy at the Center for Science and the Public Interest said, "It's a shame that Congress seems more interested in protecting industry than protecting children's health. At a time when child nutrition and childhood obesity are national health concerns, Congress should be supporting USDA and school efforts to serve healthier school meals, not undermining them. Together, the school lunch riders and the agriculture spending bill will protect industry's ability to keep pizza and french fries on school lunch trays." So, yeah.
I wish that I'd known we were going to have sound from her.
Oh, did we have sound from her?
Well, no. I mean, that, you know, in other words, I wish I'd known that...
That she was going to say something?
I had some sound that I would have used for her. Let's see if I can... hold on. See, it's such a bad 1%. Yeah. 1% joke now.
For Margot Wootan?
Here's the thing, every time you say that, I'm actually hearing two different things in my head. I'm hearing the joke I was gonna do, and then I'm also hearing Busta Rhymes going Wootan, like in the, you know.
I bet not enough people actually say that to her.
Yeah.
Being that she's director of nutrition policy at the Center for Science and Public Interest,
yeah,
she probably doesn't have enough people going Wootan at her.
See,
but she should.
No, so like, if you would now, like, introduce her, or you know, like, give set up the soundbite from her again.
It's a shame the Congress seems more interested in protecting industry than protecting children's health, according to Margaret Wootan.
Nah, it doesn't work. Never mind. Forget it. No.
Anyway, moving on. Let's find this one here. A portal to a parallel computing universe opened at the Tyson's Corners Center Mall in Fairfax County, Virginia, Thursday. Enthusiastic crowds were greeted by cheering employees at the opening of an elegant boutique stocked with touchscreen smartphones and tablets, ultralight laptops, and all-in-one desktops, all running Microsoft software. The reality of the Microsoft Store, the Tyson's location, is its 14th, is that, yes, it looks a lot like an Apple Store.
That's hard to believe.
It has the same shoebox lineup, with computers and mobile devices displayed on tables for easy evaluation. As an Apple Store, a tech support desk and a small theater area await in the back. Said Brad Smith, a Microsoft vice president in town for the opening, "It's the nature of retail. You go to Saks and you're going to see some similarities to Nordstrom."
Does this mean that Bill Gates has to die, but really badly? Like, you know, like he'll screw it up somehow. Like he'll just be in an extended coma.
I think so.
You know? Or just start to smell really bad.
Just going to start rotting from the... He will be the first zombie in the zombie apocalypse.
Ugh,
but he'll continue to go to work.
By the way, can I just tell you, I'm reading the Steve Jobs biography, which is just glorious, which is awesome. And I'm near the end of the book, and I find myself actually slowing down as I read the Steve Jobs biography because it's so great, but it's like, you kind of know how it ends. And so I find myself reading slower and slower as I get to the end. I have just passed the point where Steve Jobs is standing in his home and then later doing it at a cafe, telling the executives from Google that he will destroy them if he has to spend every penny, and if he has to, like, you know, fight to his dying breath. He's like,
wow.
I will destroy you, which is just so great.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, you know, I like to think that there'll be some sort of, like, really stylish poltergeist that will haunt the Microsoft stores, you know, but it'll just make, like, really pleasing sounds in the background.
Well, I guess the Microsoft stores are a lot like the Apple stores. You do get, like, the slate tablets running Windows 7, and you can see them, particularly, which is, they say, is a curious choice considering how poorly the slates have sold.
God damn.
That they're, like, they have prime placement in the front of the store, like, look what we got! And, like, nobody wants them. And then also, they said that the attractiveness of the store's pricing varies. All the peripherals could be had for less elsewhere. And, of course, a similar situation is the same kind of at the Apple Store. You can find stuff at the Apple Store for less. But in the Microsoft Store, they said, desktops and laptops get what the company calls its signature treatment. If you buy them there in the store, they delete third-party bloatware, they do a general performance tune-up, and they install their own free Security Essentials malware protection and the Windows Live experience.
And this is if you do what?
It's if you buy your stuff at the Microsoft Store.
Let me understand this. So they actually just acknowledge that, like, their crap is so frequently just packed with garbage and detritus that one of the selling points is, hey, we know you hate, like, 40% of the things that come on your computer. If you buy it here for more, we'll take off a bunch of crap that we ourselves allowed to be loaded on to our system.
Yes.
Well done, Microsoft.
Yes, indeed.
That's fantastic. Jesus.
A team of scientists have repeated the results of a controversial experiment that appeared to capture a subatomic particle known as a neutrino moving faster than the speed of light. That unexpected result, if accurate, should be impossible, according to Einstein's theory of relativity. Fernando Ferroni, president of the Italian Institute for Nuclear Physics and one of the 160 physicists involved in the experiment, said the repeat performance made him more confident that the results of the first experiment might have been accurate. The initial experiment made headlines in September and was widely criticized by the scientific community at the time. One physicist even promised to eat his boxer shorts on live TV if the results turned out to be true.
Oh, please tell me. Please, please, please tell me that, like, somebody's scheduling that now.
I guess they have to.
Oh, that's great.
But unfortunately, they said the repeat experiment merely ruled out one possible source of error out of many. So I guess he's not ready to eat his boxer shorts yet. The second experiment took place in the same facility as the first, using the CERN particle accelerator. But this time, the packets of neutrinos traveling 445 miles were sent in shorter bursts of 3 nanoseconds each, more than 3,000 times briefer than the earlier test. That minimized the possibility that the results were due to the uncertainty of when an individual neutrino particle was actually fired. In both experiments, the neutrinos arrived at their destination 60 nanoseconds faster than a beam of light. So Nature magazine explains that the second round of experiments does not address the other major criticism of the experiments, the more or less unestablished use of GPS to synchronize clocks on either end of the beam. And because the repeated results are from the same team as the first experiment, there's been no independent check of the results. So, but still, they may have sent something faster than the speed of light.
So this is, all right, but it's just like a guy just said he did it, like no one was in the room.
Well, they did it at the CERN laboratory. There were probably a whole lot of people there. They got a lot of people working there.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of people working on a soundstage with Stanley Kubrick in 1969. Mm-hmm. I know we were talking about that.
I think so.
But they haven't been able to do it again.
They did it again, but they still, I guess they have to keep doing it over and over again until everyone's satisfied that every single aspect of the experiment, you know, is accurate.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And that's all the science.
I would weigh in at this point, but that would be ludicrous even by my standards. So there you go. There's your Science on the March for Friday, November 18th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, and really in just moments, we're going to have your entertainment news. I mean, it might be like many moments, but in moments, we'll have your entertainment
some
news.
Moments.
In a
handful.
After a heaping helping, a fistful of moments, we'll have entertainment news next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, Geek Watch, also a Hick Watch. Plus, Mr. Big Jim Willig is going to be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, he concludes, or continues, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, say it. Say it!
Brovember. he'll be talking about Charlie and Eddie Murphy. That'll be next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. I also did misspeak earlier, by the way, when I said that as of Monday, you'll be able to hear Legion of News at the same time. But you want to go to LegionofNews.com for that. That is where you want to go. You want to go to LegionofNews.com as of Monday. Here is Don Taylor.
An 11-year-old boy who said he was fed up with marijuana smoke in his house took pictures of the drug, which led to a raid by authorities and sent his mother and stepfather to jail in Minnesota. Drug agents served a search warrant on the house near Hastings, Minnesota, last month and arrested Heidi Seibenaler, a Dakota County probation supervisor, and her husband, Mark Seibenaler.
Didn't we have a name a lot like this, like a week and a half? Wasn't there a horrible mugshot? And it was a name a lot like this one?
It was kind of like that,
and it was like Hergenschlagen or something?
Yeah. The criminal complaint says the boy told investigators he had complained numerous times to his mother about the smell of the marijuana. He finally took the matter to his biological father, who told his son to take pictures of the marijuana. The father then forwarded the photos to the authorities. Heidi Siebenaler said her husband smokes marijuana for medicinal purposes.
Somebody's a troll.
Well, the TriMet driver here in Portland who told a woman to make her child stop crying, you remember that story?
Yes, I do.
Has amassed 209 customer service complaints during her 10 years with the organization, according to records obtained by the Portland Tribune. And the incident is spurring changes within the transportation organization. In the September 29th incident, the driver on line 57 approached a woman with a crying child and asked her to make the child stop. According to transcripts of a call the driver made to dispatch that night, she told the woman she would not drive the bus until the girl was quiet. The mother and child left the bus, followed by many other passengers in protest. Many of the complaints made over the years alleged the same driver yelled at or confronted passengers. Not every complaint made against the driver was founded, but the driver was ordered to attend customer service training more than 10 times as a result of complaints.
I would totally be
on
that bus.
What do you have to do to get fired by these people, though?
But wouldn't you absolutely ride...
rape retarded girls. I guess we've learned that in the past. That's happened with TriMet.
That was just a phrase that just took a very dark turn all of a sudden. I was going to make a whimsical bit of comedy come to life, and then you're all with...
But you would ride the bus with the person who was making the crying children get off, according to you.
Leave
the bus.
Okay, let's just...
remove themselves
physically from
the bus.
Forward.
Okay, anyway, Jeff Ackerson, another TriMet driver, defends the driver's record. He said she enforces more rules than other drivers, and therefore that leads to more complaints. She's actually just a driver who tries to enforce the rules and drive her bus safely, he said, and a lot of people interpret that as being told what to do. Well, yeah, a lot of people on the bus need to be told what to do.
See, but that's what I'm saying. I would absolutely ride that bus because that is somebody, you get the sense that is somebody who is ensuring a smooth and placid ride for the rest of us who don't have like a squalling thing at the end of a tether because we, can't be bothered to look up from our pearl-encrusted BlackBerry long enough to hold it. So, seriously.
I like that in your world, people who have terrible children have BlackBerries.
I got to tell. Well, they don't just have BlackBerries; they have BlackBerries that have jewels for buttons. I'm telling you right now, you see somebody on a bus, and it is always somebody on a bus who has a BlackBerry, and it's always a goddamn BlackBerry for some reason that has faux jewels for buttons.
Oh.
They're a terrible parent.
Yeah.
More specifically, they're a terrible mother. That is what Einstein would call a cosmological constant. So,
Well, let's see which we're going to... A newspaper columnist in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, predicted the Penn State child abuse scandal might lead to similar charges at other universities nationwide. Rich Lewis with The Sentinel says most schools are very closed communities, and that can cause a crime to go unreported.
Her death was ruled an accident.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is this?
Penn State one.
No, that's wrong. Okay.
You had closed networks of people who all knew each other and might be reluctant, for example, to say anything negative or report anything negative about a long-time colleague.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, it's if a guy's getting his rape on, like, he'd have to be a really nice guy for you to not mention that to somebody. Like, what? How good could his Christmas presents possibly be that you go, well, and there's some raping. But, I mean, look at this swizzle stick set he got made.
It's when you've got men in particular who come from another time. You know, Joe Paterno was kind of in charge of this stuff. You look at him, he was 84 years old. But also, this went back like 10 years. But there's a sort of a generational and a boys club thing. It is, like I said, a closed community. And it is in many ways similar to the Catholic Church pedophilia stuff. There are people saying, well, it's better for all of us if we just keep this quiet.
No need for a ruckus.
Yeah, now if you just promise you won't do it again.
Yeah, it's funny,
we'll calm down the parents and maybe, slip them a little money, and then we'll just kind of make this go away and get on, and we'll all get on with our lives.
I was actually talking to, my wife and I were having a long conversation last night for reasons that are long and ultimately pointless, but to discuss here, but it's totally unrelated, whatever. We were talking about the way the Catholic Church, because I was raised Catholic and she was Mormon, we're like a really, really lame, uninteresting Bridget loves Bernie. But I was raised Catholic and she was Mormon, and we were talking about how the Mormon Church treats like an alcoholic dad, who's like punching everybody in the face, as opposed to how the Catholic Church treats it. And the Mormon Church, like, they are big on like discretion and like not, like keeping it quiet, but at the same time, like the Mormon Church, like the guy, the bishop will come to your home and he'll be like this is ending now, and because there's such massive peer pressure, and like they have the ability to just exclude you from the social circle, and if you're Mormon, the church micromanages your life, and the threat of being shut out of the church, which is your whole sort of world, is a big powerful threat. The Catholics do this weird, masculine yet totally ineffective, like kind of quasi mafia thing, where they sit down and they just talk to you like as men. They just say, look, it's like when, what the Catholic Church says? The Catholic Church, it's like when Paulie is talking to Henry in Goodfellas. And he's like, you got to go back home. This is no good. You can't, Well, you just go, do whatever you have to do. You just, you know, we can't, you go home to Karen and just, you know, whatever has to happen. Like, that's their whole thing, is like, just man up and like, take it. But then with like a total lack of follow through. It's like a whole, you need to be a good father. That's all the advice we're going to give you. Good day to you. And then like, there's no like additional sort of handbook for that. Anyway, so it is the same.
And of course, and if the women are being abused, they're told that, well, they just have to put their faith in God and honor their husband. And
that's right, Don.
And just put a little makeup up on that black eye and say a few Hail Marys and
maybe keep dinner hot for once, huh? How about that?
Maybe not talk back so much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Lou says this kind of atmosphere, it's the kind of atmosphere that led to the alleged crimes going unreported, is probably a common thing.
It became very clear to me that these conditions exist at most, if not all, of the College of Universities across the United States.
The boys are all just so tender and succulent.
They're so pretty when they're that age.
It's just really, you know, it can't
just
be
hard to stop. Yeah. Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your. That was not your entertainment.
No,
in case
that
you
wasn't entertaining
That's
at all.
Not, no, I mean, no. Well, I mean, not for us. Here's your entertainment news for Friday, November 18th.
After 6 years of marriage, Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher will part ways. Reps for the actress have confirmed to Entertainment Weekly that Moore has decided to end her marriage with the Two and a Half Men star weeks after the couple became tabloid fodder following Kutcher's alleged extramarital affairs. Said Moore in a statement obtained by Entertainment Weekly, "It is with great sadness and a heavy heart that I've decided to end my six-year marriage to Ashton. As a woman, a mother, and a wife, there are certain values and vows that I hold sacred, and it is in this spirit that I have chosen to move forward with my life. This is a trying time for me and my family, and so I would ask for the same compassion and privacy that you would give anyone going through a similar situation."
You know what I realized?
Yeah, that'll happen.
What I realized with this is I could not possibly give less of a rat's ass about Demi. And then, here's a question for you. You know about moving pictures.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know this. Was Demi Moore ever a good actress? Like, I'm not saying she's the worst actress ever, but like, was there a time when we went, was a serious, you know, when you listed serious actresses, she was one?
Demi Moore was not a terrible actress. And the ways of Hollywood are often mysterious. I don't know, you know, if she slept her way to a certain point or what happened. But there was a period when she was very hot. And she was very hot because the movies that she starred in made a lot of money. And I've always called this, I've always thought of this as the Demi Moore, you know, problem with Hollywood. When she was, when her movies were making a whole lot of movies, she became at one time the highest paid actress in Hollywood. Then she made Striptease and G.I. Jane.
Oh, yeah.
And they bombed horribly. And suddenly she couldn't get arrested, as if those movies were her fault. And the thing is, those
like Ridley Scott or something.
Those movies did not fail because of her any more than the movies that she had starred in that made a gazillion dollars made lots of money because she was in them. But the thing is, whoever's the face, there is this belief in Hollywood that certain actors
can open a
film, or that people will just not go to things because of somebody. And that's all just absolute nonsense. And the thing is, she has always been a competent but extremely mediocre actress.
So it's just the perception evolved.
Yeah.
So did Ridley Scott make G.I. Jane?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was a terrible film.
It was.
And, you know, she picked it, but at the same time, it's like, I think a lot of actors will tell you, when all is said and done, nobody really has any idea what the movie's going to look like when they say yes to the script. You just sort of pick the script and then you just hope.
Yeah, and there's a I saw George Clooney talk about this on a talk show once when he said that the valuable lesson that he learned from making Batman and Robin was that for better or worse, if you are the star of a movie, its success or failure is going to be blamed on you.
Right.
And he said, and that was the point when he decided he was only going to make the movies that he wanted to make. He was not going to take movies simply for a paycheck. He was only going to make movies that he felt like he could shoulder the burden of its goodness or badness if he needed to.
It seems like it's a no-win situation, because if the movie's good but you really didn't have anything to do with it, that just makes you feel like freaked out and neurotic, because you're like, I'm a fraud. They think I'm responsible for that. I really didn't do anything. I just showed up. And if it's bad and they blame you, then it's like, then you're just bitter because, you know, they're blaming the tanking on you. So, yeah, good for him for taking that route. The only thing I ever really liked her in, and it's not even really, again, you're right, because it's not even really her. It's just, I liked her a lot in A Few Good Men, I guess, but that's because I kind of, as clunky as it sort of is, it's because I like that film.
No, she was never terrible. She just was really, really unexceptional. It's just that she was also very photogenic. And I guess a lot of times, a lot of success in Hollywood, even if it doesn't have to do with, I don't know, behind-the-scenes relationships, but a lot of times it just has to do with, I think, somebody showing up and doing the work and not being a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, part of it, too, is if you're not just, like, a complete dick. Plus, she did that other thing where she was in, as you said, she was in a couple flops back, a high-profile flops back-to-back, and I think Ron Howard said that you get two of those, but then it's the third one that's the make or break. You get two flops, and like your next thing then better be really, really, really good. Otherwise, you're like sealed. But that she did the other thing where she had two really high profile successes back to back because the concepts themselves were really provocative and steamy. She did Disclosure, which was the female harassing the male, sex harassment thing, and then Indecent Proposal, which is a terrible film.
It is.
It's an
yes.
awful film that I, like everybody else, went to see like a boob.
Well, Bonnie Pointer, a founding member of the famous Pointer Sisters singing group, was arrested early this morning in Los Angeles for possession of a controlled substance. According to law enforcement, 61-year-old Pointer was busted for felony possession of a controlled substance at 12:39 a.m. and taken to a nearby police station where she was booked and held on $10,000 bail. Doesn't say what it was she actually had on her. But the Pointer Sisters were huge in the 70s and 80s, had hits like Slow Hand and Neutron Dance. Apparently there was footage shot by TMZ of Bonnie Pointer last weekend. She was coming out of a party or a bar or something, and she seemed, they say, loopy and out of it. And she said that her sister Anita Pointer was fighting cancer. But later, TMZ updated and said, no. So I was next to Anita Pointer, say she's fine. She doesn't have cancer.
She's just real grouchy.
Her sister was just saying that for some reason. Ryan Seacrest is being sued by a woman who claims she was humiliated in a taping of the new reality show he's producing called Shaws of Sunset, insisting she was forced against her will to play the role of the bad girl. The show is being hailed as the Persian Jersey Shore, featuring a bunch of young, rich Persians gallivanting around Los Angeles. But according to a new lawsuit filed by a woman named Kathy Salem, the show is just as insane and violent as every other reality show on TV, a lesson she claims she learned at a fancy party back in July. She claims she signed a waiver before entering the party and understood she would appear on the show, but she did not understand that she might be blindsided and forced against her will to play a demeaning and humiliating role. Salem claims she was inside the party, was confronted by the stars of the show, who began to bully her and become verbally abusive because she was talking to a man who was allegedly engaged. Salem claims things escalated quickly. She was attacked by multiple people, one of whom tried to rip her top off and another who threw a cup of water in her face. Salem says the show is set to air in January, but she wants a judge to force Ryan Seacrest to pull any footage in which she appears.
I didn't know there was like actual like alleged, you know, like physical whatever. Because I was gonna, when you said earlier she was suing Ryan Seacrest, I was hoping that footage would come out. What if it just came out of like him just like beating a woman with a hammer, just like Ryan Seacrest just being. What if Ryan Seacrest, like you saw it, and he was just like setting fire to people, and then just going, get rid of that, and then that's it,
Bring me new shoes.
Exactly, just. With a wheelbarrow of dead hookers. Just, I want a bagel! And just machine gunning a whole set.
Oh,
full.
That would be the best.
I like it. That's when my brain turns into a Bad Family Guy episode, where it's like, I hear Ryan Seacrest's a real pain to work with. And then it's him just pushing someone through a mesh screen.
So the big story in entertainment right now, we don't really have time to cover it. We will talk about this more in the Rick Emerson Show. Police have reportedly reopened an investigation into the death of Natalie Wood, who died under mysterious circumstances on her yacht in 1981. She drowned while boating off Catalina Island. She was with her husband, Robert Wagner, and their actor friend, Christopher Walken. They had eaten at a restaurant, returned to the dock. There apparently was a heated fight between Wagner and Walken. Wood left to go to the Master Cabin. The men calmed down, and then they later found she had fallen overboard and had drowned. But for various reasons, there's a bunch of stuff that's coming out slowly. This is a story that's going to develop over the course of the next few weeks.
So we'll have sound on that next hour.
Yeah, and so, but they have decided to reopen that case and take a look because some new elements have come to light.
It makes me a terrible person that was like one of the highlights of my morning. Like it used to be, my homepage used to be yahoo.com like years ago. And, and they always had the thing of like the four little headlines. And it would be like, if I opened yahoo.com and there was a celebrity death, it was, You know, it gave me a little thrill. When I opened that, it was like, Natalie Wood investigation reopened. I was like, ah, great. And it just made my whole morning.
I actually got a little thrill out of that. And then I remembered the Christopher Walken connection. I went, oh. Because I'm sad. I am a little sad if anything bad happens to Christopher Walken.
Nothing bad can happen to Christopher Walken. He's like the Grimace. Nothing can harm him.
Hope he turns out okay in all of this.
There's your entertainment news.
Unless, of course, he's a murderer. But he's probably not. Because he's Christopher Walken.
Probably not a murderer.
Probably not.
On that note, we want to take a moment here to thank Robert Wagner and everybody at Cascadia.fm.
I love you, Sabrina Miller. I love you, Robert Wagner.
And it has been an honor, and it's been a lot of fun to be part of Cascadia.fm and to be part of PDX.fm. And I emailed Robert. This is where I tell you, like, publicly how great I am in this private email I sent. But I said that it
was... Because it is all about you.
I'm glad that we got to be a part of it, and they made the broadcast really accessible and really smooth and seamless for the listener, which is a too rare thing, you know, even now in 2011. So thanks to everybody at Cascadia.fm. You can hear us still starting Monday at legionofnews.com. So best of continued success to Robert Wagner and everybody at Cascadia.fm. Everybody have a good weekend. We will see you Monday, won't we?
You better come over. You got to stay with us. Because we love you.
We'll see y'all then. We come to you live each and every week in the studios of the Emerson News Network, high over the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic Provider, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thanks for listening. Have a safe weekend. Bye now.